Environment and Land Use to order. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 346.
That says Joe Rowlater.
That says Joe Rowlater, huh? Nice handwriting, Mr. Rowlater. The bill there. Let's first have the staff present the bill. Who's bill? Your bill?
It's a committee bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have Senate Bill 346, which allows for the propagation, cultivation, maintenance, and harvesting of aquatic species for uses other than food or game in exclusive farm use zones. The bill also rewords a great deal of the section of the ORS that defines farm use, although council insists that it is not a substantive change and is just a rewording, although we do have a set of amendments in your packets, which would restore the original language there.
Committee, as long as we have a quorum, I'd like to recess and go into the work session for the introduction of committee bills, if that's okay. So with that, we'll recess the public hearing on Senate Bill 346, and we'll open the work session for the introduction of committee bills. I'll let the committee administrator, our committee staff read the bill summaries or the relating clauses. And just to let you know that because we're one of the last committees open, we're getting a lot of bills dumped into us just to be read as committee bills. So go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have 24 LC drafts that we're introducing today as committee bills. I'll read the numbers and the rating clauses. LC 1299 relating to school impact fees for school districts. LC 1300 relating to school impact fees for school districts. LC 1407 relating to rights for injured workers. LC 1442 relating to recycling of electronic products. LC 2174 relating to compensation for reduction in value due to land use regulation. LC 2327 relating to fire safety standards for cigarettes. LC 2390 relating to electricity generated by the state. LC 2391 relating to energy facility siting. LC 2392 relating to small-scale energy projects. LC 2395 relating to marine protected areas. LC 2452 relating to energy tax credits. LC 2512 relating to annexation of industrial land. LC 2595 relating to measurement of water use. LC 2625 relating to land use planning in Metropolitan Service District. LC 2639 relating to commercial fishing. LC 2694 relating to annexation of land used in business. LC 2701 relating to materials used in residential structures. LC 2738 relating to sobriety checkpoints. LC 2741 relating to governing body of county service district. LC 2760 relating to minimum stream flow requirements. LC 2793 relating to the environment. LC 2794 relating to environment. LC 2795 relating to forests. LC 2796 relating to forests.
Thank you. Chair moves that the bills just read be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
I believe that Senate or LC draft 2327 is ridiculous, but I will not. I will not object to them being introduced.
Probably half of them are ridiculous from one point of view or another.
all of them are ridiculous from one point of view or another.
Any objection? So ordered. And
do you want to get rid of these two? Government, general government.
Let's hold on to them just for a minute. Yeah. And so let's return to a public hearing on Senate Bill 346.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Thank you. These bills were drafted at my direction, and then I appreciate the committee introducing them as committee bills. Senate Bill 346, you'll see an extensive amendment to the bill, which is, it is a gut and stuff. The bill wasn't drafted as we had hoped it to be, but rather than when we asked for a redraft of a bill, Legislative Council chose to draft a rewrite through an amendment process rather than introducing a new bill. So that's I'd like today for the focus of the people in the audience who are going to testify. Hopefully you all have a copy of the dash one amendments for the bill. I'd like that to be the focus of the testimony on the bill, the dash one amendments.
Okay, thank you. Senator Byer, do you know whether the dash one amendments were made available to any of the interested folks before this hearing?
I believe so. That they came out and they were given to the committee staff, and I believe they were circulated with most people. I know at least the department has received them.
Okay.
I can make additional copies.
All right. Well, and Senator Beyer, I guess since you have a particular interest in this, who would you like to lead off the discussion and be the first witness?
Why don't you bring up Joe Rollator, and he's got some other folks with him. If you'd
okay.
Like to.
Joe Rollator?
Yeah. And I've got some extra copies of the Dash 1s if there need be.
Okay. Thank you.
I've got three copies right here. So. One
second. That needs them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm the government affairs representative for Oregon Aquaculture Association. Our president is here today, and I think we'll just let Clint, President Clint Vance, speak about this particular bill.
Senator Ringo and Senator Beyer, Senate Bill 346 is there's. Been an issue when the EFU legislation was drafted versus the designated farm legislation, which was done later. And the designated farm statutes clearly identified aquaculture as being agriculture. When the EFU statutes were drafted, they did not. It was not clear. So depending on when the counties implemented their EFU regulations, some of the counties included aquaculture as agriculture, some of them did not. And so the idea behind Senate Bill 346 was just to make it clear that aquaculture is agriculture, that it's a permitted use rather than a conditional use. Aquaculture is defined as agriculture everywhere you can find it. It's in the tax code, it's in some of the other things, but there is in the EFU language, it's not clear that aquaculture is agriculture, and some of the counties are treating it as a conditional use, requiring our members to go through a permit process whenever they do anything on their related to their aquaculture facility. So we just want to clear that up so that it's a permitted use, could be treated like any other agricultural use in agricultural lands. So it was just a simple thing to clear that up. And we have one of our members who has been impacted by this in her county. Ann?
My name is Ann Reistrom, and I'm with Clear Creek Rainbow Ranch, and we have a farm in Clackamas County, or two farms in Clackamas County, one in Estacada and one in Oregon City. One is an EFU zone, and for that location, every time we move a portable tank or put up a portable tank or put a canopy over a portable tank, we have to go in and get a zoning change under the conditional use permit. So the timing has been, you know, it takes, I don't know, 6-8 weeks to go through it, and then we've got a $600 bill every time we want to do something like that. And we believe that aquaculture is agriculture and should fall under the same rules.
You know, I'm sorry I had to step out for just a second. Did you already testify, Mr. Rollator?
Mr. Chairman, I just introduced myself and turned it over to our president.
Okay.
And Senator Ringo, just to bring up, since you were out, is just the idea behind 346 is just to let people to clarify in the EFU statute that aquaculture is agriculture and it's a permitted use rather than a conditional use. The designated farm zone, that's already in there. My understanding is the EFU statutes were written before, and it just wasn't clear when the EFU statutes were drafted that aquaculture was included or not. Some of the counties have it, and some don't.
Okay. Ms. Nystrom, I just had a couple questions about the scope of your operation. How many employees do you have?
We have had two full-time employees and two part-time employees. In 2001, our facility, which raises rainbow trout in Oregon City, was diagnosed with having whirling disease. In 2001, we were instructed that we would not be made to kill our fish, and so we continued raising those from 4 inches up to a marketable size. In 2003, we were notified and given 37 days to remove all of our stock and dewater our ponds. Since that time, we really have not been given any clear guidance as to what we can do with our facility. We've got 10 CFS that's off of Clear Creek that's suitable for aquaculture use, and it pretty much the farm is just sitting there. And so because of the issues that we have in trying to be fish farmers in Oregon, when the fish health exam information came up, we got together with some other fish farmers and discovered that they too were having problems, and that aquaculture in Oregon is not encouraged, it's not a very viable industry. And so we got together in the early part of this year to try to put together some things so that we can have Oregon aquaculture as a viable business.
So you're right now your operation is pretty much on hold.
At that facility, we do have a well in a hatchery that we can raise some rainbow trout in a minimal amount of water with recirculating systems. Our second site is completely in well water, and we're under the 3 gallon a minute to where we have to, you know, get an aquaculture permit. At our other facility, we're pretty much just reselling fish just to keep things going and to bring in some income while we wait for our creek to be classified as to what we can do. We have not gotten really clear guidance, and we think that some of these bills will help us to address those issues. Should I go into the other bills now?
No, not quite yet. Who do you sell your fish to?
Mostly just private pond owners. There's some UCatch facilities that we sell fish to. We stock the Sportsman Show for 20 years and had to call them up 1 year and say, sorry, we can't bring you fish. Mm-hmm. And in that facility, with whirling disease, it's not a disease it does anything to the fish unless they get it under 3 inches. If they get it under 3 inches, then it causes deformities in the cartilage, and the fish spin, you know, and have some deformities. If they get it over that, there's nothing wrong with the fish. In fact, as many of the salmon that you have in the Columbia River actually have the parasite that causes whirling disease. And so we felt that we should have been able to do some other things with that fish.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the committee?
Okay. Mr. Chair, apologize for coming in late. On 346, how come you had to rewrite the whole section here?
Senator Ringo, Senator Murdick. Thank you. My name is Clint Vance. I'm the president of the association. We asked legislative council to draft a fairly simple, with Senator Byer's office to do something fairly simple. When they looked at that, they decided that there were several things they wanted to do to rewrite that BFU area and do a cleanup. Mm-hmm. When we got it back, it was so complicated nobody understood what they were trying to do, and so we asked them basically to do it again. And so that's what the
to have one amendment. To have a standalone section like that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'm still a little unclear why being a conditional use is a problem as opposed to being an outright use.
Well, every time we put up a temporary structure, we have a temporary above-ground portable tank mm-hmm. that we can move around, and we put a canopy tent over that when it's hot. And we were told that every time we put up a temporary structure or if we wanted to add a secondary structure to that, that we had to come in and get another conditional use permit. Fish and Wildlife is notified, EPA is notified. We have to take in documentation that we've complied with everything from Fish and Wildlife. It's a whole series, and it takes, 6-8 weeks in order to get approval, and $600 in order to get approval to put up an above-ground tank.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I can follow up.
Sure.
I'm not as familiar as I should be with fish farming operations. So what kind of conflicts do they pose, if any, to surrounding farming operations or orchard operations?
At our Estacada address on Springwater Road, there's no water drainage. We're pumping out of a well. We're using a little bit of recirculating the water just a little bit, and it's enough that we can just use the discharge to water the field. So water does not impact surrounding farms.
Chair, I was also getting to the issue of, for example, if a farmer were to use pesticides or fertilizers that might get into the fish tanks, what kind of conflicts are there between standard farming and fish farming?
We do have a tree farm next to us that does aerial spraying. We have not lost any of our fish due to that aerial spraying. The next door neighbor has a pond, a koi pond, and she has.
And Senator Ringo, Senator Burdick, most of the fish hatchery facilities are in multiple use operations. Generally, people are doing farming, they're doing cattle, they're doing other things in addition to the fish. Water sensitive and fish are sensitive, but it's the same precautions we take when we're farming next to a stream. You don't allow drift to get into the into the water. Most of this water is coming, is the surface water coming into our facility and leaving our facility. So it's the same kind of precautions you take with any other type of agriculture. But there's nothing special about that than you'd be around any type of water that was on your facility.
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up question.
Sure.
Do you raise the fish to maturity for the market, or do you raise them to send somewhere else to reach maturity?
Senator Ringo, Senator Burdick, our growers generally are hatching an egg. They're purchasing an eyed egg, for the most part, from somebody who's doing brood stock. We're hatching the eggs out, and we're raising them to maturity. So we're selling. So it depends on what our customer wants. If they want to buy a fingerling fish to put in their ponds, we'll sell them that. Most of our customers today are asking for a catchable fish. There's a new market that's opening up for a trophy-sized fish, which is a 2 to 3 pound fish, and so that's we're meeting those markets as well. So it's just kind of whatever the customer wants. It's all live. It's a sport fish, so that somebody's going to come catch.
Okay. All right. Thank you
for research.
Clarifying that. I wish I. It's kind of a learning experience for me here. Thank you.
Could you help me track through what is the operative language of this bill? Looking at the regular bill, and then you've got the dash one amendments. Looking at the dash one amendments, all I can see, and I don't know if Senator Beyer wants to, you're focused in on the exact language, but on the first page, line 23, it deletes the words aquatic species, and then the top of the next page, it adds the words back. I think that's just trying to clean up the readability of the statute. So point me to the words that make
Mr. Chair, if you look through the bill, through the amendment, it's in one place in each of the sections there where it deletes, for instance, on page 24 of the amendment, line 3 and 4, it deletes the words aquatic and.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to find.
And in each section of the bill, it should be deleting the words aquatic and. And that's, my understanding is that allows them to be outright uses instead of conditional uses of EFU.
Okay.
Mr. Lillay would have no. Again, on page 11, you'll find it on page lines 28 and 29.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. If we could have, is it Lyle Negus? Is that right? Negus? And then I have Ken Dunder and Kathy Bridges. Okay. Well, let's start with Lyle Negus. Thank you, and also perhaps at Tom McDonald. Are you here? Okay.
Actually, you can get my stuff together here.
Let's see, Senator, my name is Lyle Negus from Desert Springs Trout Farm in Summer Lake, Oregon, and I'm here to give a short testimony on Senate Bill 352. And
well, let's hang on a minute. I've got you down for Senate Bill 346.
Oh,
are
no.
We? This is the bill we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I'm.
Yeah, they did the testimony.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll cross your name off this.
Okay.
And stay tuned then to when we get to the next bill. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you.
That's okay. Well, but let's bring up Jim Johnson then from the Department of Agriculture, and also Roy Elliker from Fish and Wildlife.
Chair Ringo, committee members, my name is Jim Johnson. I'm the Land Use and Water Quality Specialist for the Department of Agriculture. I just would like to very quickly focus on the Dash 1 amendments. We had several concerns with this bill that have been addressed with the amendments, and they were specifically related to changes in the definition of farm use, specifically removing Christmas trees as a farm use. and also related to the changing of the word may to shall. Both of those issues have been addressed in the dash ones, and with those we would not have any issues with the bill as proposed now.
Ken?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name for the record is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, in charge of Fish and Wildlife field operations. Mr. Chair, we received these amendments last week, and from listening to the testimony given by Mr. Benz and others, we're very much in support of the aquaculture industry here in Oregon. However, some issues, looking at the Dash 1 amendments, though, and speaking to our lawyers in the AG's office, as well as Ron Ebert, DLCD, I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not sure that we don't want to suffer from the law of unintended consequences in making these changes. The rule does fundamentally change, I think, how counties would permit and we might permit aquaculture facilities. Goes from a conditional use to a permitted use, and I guess at this point, as I said to Jim earlier, I think it would be wise for Department of Ag, ODF&W, and the LCD to sit down and do a quick review of this with the AG's office to make sure there aren't any 37 issues or other potential issues, and I guess I'm not prepared to say that we don't have any issues with the bill at this time.
Okay. The purpose that at least they discussed was more flexibility with their operation, changing tanks in and out, and not having to run and get a permit for that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we don't have a problem with that. I'm not here to.
Okay.
If they need greater flexibility, particularly in their operations, the ODF&W doesn't have any issues with that purpose.
Okay. I guess I'd like to make sure this is moving forward. How long is it going to take for you to get together with those folks?
Just a few days, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, we're not going to move it today, but if you could get back to the state committee staff within a week, is that okay?
Oh, that's plenty of time. I was thinking that tomorrow or the next day I'd set up a meeting, and not a problem.
Okay, well, I'll let you coordinate with the committee staff then and make sure that you give us your input then, and if you could do that fairly quickly, that would be great. And if you do have some specific concerns, I guess I'd like them. Put them in paper somehow.
Yes, so we'll do that now.
Committee, any questions then? Senator Shields?
I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, for emphasizing the idea of getting it done quickly and getting back to us rather than letting it get bogged down in a building that finds more ways to lose things than you can shake a stick at.
Okay. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, if I can arrange this meeting tomorrow morning, I'll do that.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you
very much. I did have a Bob Horning on this. If you want to come up and... I think you're my constituent.
Pretty close.
Pretty close?
Pretty close, yeah.
Okay.
We've met several times.
I know. I've taken my kids to your place.
Yeah. Well, Senators, my name is Bob Horning. I'm here to testify in support of the bill, Measure 346. What it does to me, and for a lot of people in the agriculture industry, is just clean stuff up a bit. It designates aquatic species fish as more of a true farm animal than something that right now there's layers of bureaucracy with Fish and Wildlife, and everybody has their hand in the pot. It would just make it much more clear that fish is an animal. Something that is a commodity here in Oregon and a viable commodity, and something that the community, is important to a lot of people's lives as far as money and everything else.
Have you run into issues where because you wanted to do things with tanks or other equipment, you have to go get permits?
I have a UCatch farm. I'm sorry, but my statute.
Yeah, tell everybody, you got a good operation. Tell everybody about it.
Yeah, I have Horning's Hideout. We have a UCatch farm. We do company picnics, weddings, and everything else up there. It's a private park is what it is, and we actually buy fingerlings and raise them up from some of the local hatcheries that have spoke here today. Actually, in fact, from Clear Creek Rainbow Ranch, we get our fish from them as fingerlings. But I'm supporting this bill because it would help them out a lot. Raising fish is not what you would call the most lucrative, you know, job in the world, but it is enjoyable, and it would be just, cleaning up the mess, you know, just cleaning up the language and everything else would be helpful to a lot of people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Questions of the committee? Okay, thank you very much. Art Schlack, and did you want to testify on this bill?
Well, we'll charge you extra, but you can testify. No. Why don't you just come on up with Mr. Schlack?
That might cost me more. Go ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Schlack with the Association of Oregon Counties. We just received these amendments also, and I have sent out a request to the counties to identify whether there's any problems or concerns with the proposed changes to state statute. Would note for you that, at least it's my experience with the conditional use permit process, is that there is a master plan that is usually required or is part of the conditional use permit process. And as part of that master plan, you can identify, you know, uses that are phased in over a period of time and transitional kinds of operations at this point. So temporary facilities and moving tanks around should not be a problem with the conditional use permit process. I will speak to the lady that testified earlier and ask her what county she's dealing with, and I hope to get some information. The only other concern that we would have at this point is ensuring that any operation for the raising of aquatic species and that would not take place until the Department of Fish and Wildlife have issued their appropriate permitting at this point. We would not like to have a situation where somebody can start the aquatic species before they've gone to the state and got the necessary permits from Fish and Wildlife.
Do you think that, I know you just got the amendments, that having it as an outright permitted use means that they don't have to go get a permit from ODFMW?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't believe it does, but okay. I think a clarification that they don't start the operation until they've got the permits, okay. As contrasted many times with outright permitted use, you start and then you seek potentially other permits.
Okay. Could you get the county's position to our committee staff within a week of today?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee, any questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to testify. The conditional use process is there because normally those uses are not uses that are allowable in a farm zone. They may be a conflict with agriculture. And so that's what the purpose of the conditional use is, so that the adjoining landowners can say whether or not there is a conflict. And if there's not a conflict, then fine. If there is a conflict, can it be mitigated? If it can be mitigated, then fine. If there's no conflict, then fine, go ahead and do it. If there is a conflict, no, and it can't be resolved, then the county has the authority to reject that application. Agriculture is a renewable resource. Forestry is a renewable resource. Forestry is already allowed in the EFU zone. Aquaculture is a renewable resource. We don't see that as any different than agriculture or forestry. From a production point of view, we don't see any conflict in the agriculture community by having aquaculture an automatic outright use in a farm zone. And we have seen the -1 amendments. We do not have a problem with the -1 amendments. Just wanted to put that on the record for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, I have a note here. You need to say your name for the record. What's your name?
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's okay.
Thank you. Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Thank you.
Pardon me.
Thank you, Mr. Schellenberg. Senator Shields?
Don, I just was wondering, as you were describing things, does the potential, the possibility of aquaculture provide a backdrop for, or a backstop or whatever for a farmer who may need to diversify a little bit and decided he'd like to you know, quit growing some crop and maybe do some aquaculture in his, on his land? Does that happen very often?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Shields, those kinds of decisions are routinely made by agriculture, whether it's to some kind of forest operation or whether it would be to aquaculture or simply from one agricultural crop to another agricultural crop. You've heard the old saying, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket, and farmers have to be very careful about that, and most farmers do grow more than one crop for that very reason. They can do that now. Again, they have to go through the conditional use process to do that. I don't think that it's necessary to go, should be necessary to go through the conditional process to be able to switch to agriculture or add aquaculture to your agriculture operation.
Okay, that's what I'm driving at, Mr. Chair. This, it seems to me, would facilitate some of that and benefit farmers.
Okay. Thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else on this bill committee? So we'll take a look at it depending on what comments we get in a week or so. So let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 346, and let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 351, sturgeon propagation permits. And why don't we start with, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. Joe Rollator, why don't you... if you want to kick this off with whoever you want to bring up, that would be fine. And for the committee, it was being handed out a, looks like a small fiscal impact. Go ahead, Mr. Rollator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator, representing the Oregon Aquaculture Association. Clint Bentz, the president of the Aquaculture Association, with us today. Senate Bill 351 has got three sections in it. Section 1 removes the current language that prohibits raising sturgeon except for educational and research purposes. The language that's in the current statute that gives the commission, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the option of issuing or not issuing a permit is left in. The Fish and Wildlife Commission can review any permit application. If it doesn't meet the conditions that they want to put on it, or if they want to put extra safeguards on it to protect the fish in the waters of the Columbia and the state of Oregon, they can do that under the current law, and we have not changed that. The only thing that we've changed is we've asked that the prohibition against raising sturgeon just for educational and scientific reasons be removed so that we can grow sturgeon as a part of our operations, either for food or for ornamental fish. I've given you a little handout that talks a little bit about white sturgeon and green sturgeon, some of the research that's being done in Idaho and California, and some and Washington State, and some other information. We think sturgeon would be a really good addition to our operation. We'd like to be able to grow sturgeon for the food market. We do not anticipate having to remove any more sturgeon from the Columbia than are being removed now. We believe that we could buy sturgeon that are caught by a commercial fisherman but are live and raise those up to the point that they could be propagated. Or we could buy fry from the current operator, Pelfries, and he's here today. From his operation, we could buy fry from him and raise those up to the point that they could be used for food or for broodstock. There is a broodstock program that's been developed by a coalition of the industry, University of Washington, Oregon State University, and UCal at Davis for both the states of Idaho and the state of California. In the state of Idaho, they produce about 300,000 pounds of sturgeon per year. In California, it's between 2 and 3 million pounds of sturgeon per year. That's food, fish, sturgeon. Many of those fish are going to the live market. They're put in aquarium.
I missed what you just said. That the pounds that you just described are
about
based, is that based on aquaculture in California?
Aquaculture. The farm industry raises around 300,000 pounds of sturgeon in Idaho and around 3 million pounds of sturgeon in California, and that's primarily going to the food fish market in some way, either as live fish delivered to a fish market or as fish that are served in a restaurant fresh, as fresh sturgeon. The second section of the bill makes the transportation permit part of the propagation permit. Under the existing statute, there are two permits that are necessary to transport fish, a transportation permit and a propagation permit to transport live fish. The current statute also has a exemption against having to get a transportation permit for an aquaria. An aquaria is defined as a body of water that's built to contain fish. It could be a pond, or it could be an aquarium, a glass aquarium, as long as it doesn't have an outlet. Under the current rules, we think that ODF&W probably wrote their administrative rules more restrictive than the law needs to be, and that even under the current rules, we probably shouldn't have to get a transportation permit to take a fish to a fish market or a research facility or an oriental market where the fish is being kept live and will eventually be butchered there. So this statute, our request on this statute, does not change the part of the existing statute where you have to get a permit from ODFW to stock fish into the waters of the state. And we think that's a really good protection in the system. I'll also tell you that under the current rules, if a commercial fisherman catches a fish, a sturgeon or a bass, a rockfish, and wants to deliver it to a live market, he writes himself a transportation permit. And that transportation permit, he has to keep a copy of it, and it also has to stay with the fish until the fish is ultimately processed. So the same fish, in the case of sturgeon, it would be the same fish. But in our case, we have to get a transportation permit under the current administrative rules. And we'd like to have some more flexibility. We're really trying to grow our industry here. And the third part of this bill sets up an advisory committee. It asks the Fish and Wildlife Commission to appoint an advisory committee of up to 12 people. We've named 8 people whose regular jobs is associated with aquaculture. They're people from Extension. They're people from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And we think that's part of their regular job. We've not asked for any staff support on this advisory group, but we think that we need this nexus to be able to talk directly to the Fish and Wildlife Commission as one voice. Those are the three sections of Senate Bill 351. I'll let Mr. Bentz talk unless you all have questions directly of me.
Joe, on the tonnage that you were just referring to in Idaho and California, I'm just curious. I support this bill, but on those varieties of sturgeon, is there marketable caviar from those harvests?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, the caviar market, it takes in aquaculture operation, a fish is gravid or has eggs in about 7 years, opposed to about 20 out in the wild. And the aquaculture industry in both California and Idaho have produced a technique to take the caviar from a ripe hen without killing the hen. And we understand that it's something that's just in the works right now. We think that there are about 15,000 pounds of caviar was sold from the California aquaculture industry last year, and we think it's about 600 pounds of caviar was sold from the aquaculture industry in Idaho. But that's a proprietary number, and whenever I talked to operators in either one of those states, they told me that would be a number that they'd have to kill me if they told me what it was. But it's within the range, and so I listened to enough people that I believe that I've given you realistic numbers for the 2004 delivery.
Is the quality of that caviar marketable in international markets? I mean, is it? I'm just curious. Is it viewed as lesser grade or is it high grade or?
Chair Ringo, Senator Atkinson, I understand that its farm value is about $50 an ounce. Caviar from the Caspian Sea, which is the one that's really sought after the most, is worth much more than that.
$300.
Something like outrageous, at least in my mind. However, there's a school of thought that the domestic market for caviar, the domestic producers of caviar, will supplement the wild cake because those fish are endangered. Anybody who really wants to make sure that they're not eating the eggs of an endangered fish can buy domestic certified caviar, and they know they're not somehow aiding the destruction of the Russian caviar, Russian sturgeon.
I don't know much about this breed of fish. I think it's interesting that if this bill were passed today and sturgeon were grown, that a sturgeon would outlast everyone in the room. That's a little scary. What size, my last question, what size are these fish transportable? I mean, obviously you're not going to move a 15-foot fish around.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I think up to about 6 or 7 feet, they're characteristically moved. The fish that you see in the hatcheries,
that's huge.
They're not without mortality when you move them, but you can move them. And they're sure a lot easier to handle than something like the fish that you see at the Newport Aquarium, where they've transported in 100-pound halibut and 200, 300-pound shark. The sturgeon really, really handle well in comparison to some of those other species.
Last question then. Why don't they take a fly?
Senator Ringo, ask him to quit baiting the witness.
Thank you, Senator Ringo.
He's a fly fisherman. He's a fly fisherman. He doesn't use bait.
Joe, explain to me again the need for transportation. Where would they be taken from where to where?
Senator Ringo, under the current...
And your name is?
My name is Clint Bentz.
Okay.
I run the Blue Den Ranch Trout Hatchery, and I'm also the president of the Oregon Aquaculture Association.
Okay.
The issue with transportation permits, we really have two different sides to the permit. One is to move the fish. So if we're on the road with fish in our truck, we have to have a permit, or else if we're stopped, we have to dump them out on the side of the road.
Right, so, but I'm trying to understand why are you taking them from one place to another?
Well, there's two reasons to do it. One is to take them to a client where we're putting them in a pond or stocking them somewhere in the waters of the state, which is majority of what we do. There's also times we're moving them from one facility to another in our own facilities. So if I've got a pond on one piece of property and I have a grow out pond on another piece of property, I put them on the truck. I have to move from here to here, or if I take them to a fish market or that. So that's just transport. It's not release. And under the current statute, there's a distinction between transport and release. And so what we're saying, if all we're doing is transporting from one approved facility to another, we shouldn't have to go to the department, wait a couple weeks for permission to do that, which is what it takes now on our release permits.
Okay. Anything else?
On that bill, no. On that part, again, on Section 1, on the sturgeon thing, we really see this as a tremendous economic opportunity for private aquaculture in Oregon. Most of us are raising trout. There's some bass and bluegill. The sturgeon is a complementary species. We can raise sturgeon with our trout. They actually would help clean up the facilities because they're a bottom feeder, and they would eat some of the waste products that come out from the trout. And so there's a complementary use there with the sturgeon. They actually help our facilities be cleaner.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Okay.
If I could say just the third part of the bill, which is the commission, the advisory part. This is really the centerpiece of our request as an association. We've been having multiple meetings with the department about many issues of concern to our industry. And while the individual meetings have been good, we find it difficult to actually get to a decision point with people in the department on our issues. The department has a very specific task, and that's to protect the wild fish in the state of Oregon. Sometimes they really don't know what to do with us and how to deal with our issues. And so our hope is by having this advisory committee, we can sit down together with the biologists, with the fisheries managers, with industry, with educators, with all the different voices at the table, come to some sort of a consensus resolution on what should be done, and then move that forward with the commission, rather than taking an adversarial approach to things. And so that's really the heart of what we're asking for this year is this issue. Whether this advisory commission is very important to us as an industry.
Okay, that advisory commission comes with a fiscal impact.
Yes.
And I guess my question is, if, let's say we just couldn't come up with the money, would you want us to take out Part 3 of the bill and move it with Parts 1 and 2?
Senator Ringo, our feeling is that the fiscal impact that is listed there isn't real. They basically said they're going to take a full-time staff person, hire them just to deal with us and our issues, and it's not.
I don't think that's necessary.
That's not necessary. Okay. There's several people in the department that are already tasked with working with us. We're asking to show up to a meeting once in a while and talk to us.
Okay.
We're not asking for any staff support or anything.
Okay.
We're not asking for, so we don't feel that the fiscal that's there is meaningful.
Well, let's hear from the department then.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Roy Elliker, please. And John Thorpe.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I just want to be sure that you provide a copy of our testimony.
Okay. I'm
started.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Ringo, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife Programs for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. John Thorpe, our Fish Propagation Program Manager, here to testify on Senate Bill 351. As Mr. Rolayer laid out, the bill addresses three major state aquaculture policy issues. Adoption of this bill would first substantially change current state policy on private commercial sturgeon aquaculture. Second, it would weaken state control over transportation of privately produced fish for stocking and other purposes. And third, it creates a permanent private aquaculture advisory committee. First, to the issue of sturgeon propagation. While Columbia River white sturgeon is one of the last remaining large sturgeon populations in the world, their value to Oregon sports and commercial fisheries are substantial. The estimated value of this fishery exceeded $7.74 million to the sport fishery and about $343,000 in ex-vessel value, that's monies paid directly to commercial fishermen, in 2004. Since 1989, Oregon law restricts sturgeon aquaculture to educational and scientific purposes only, with the exception of currently one small private commercial facility, and I think that's referred to as Mr. Pelfrey's, and that's grandfathered in through ORS 497-330. This restriction as a sturgeon aquaculture was passed by the Oregon legislature due to continuing concern over the health of wild Columbia River wild sturgeon populations. The key issue at the time in the debate was that sturgeon brood stock can take up to 20 years to sexually mature, perhaps a shorter time in a hatchery, maybe 10 to 15. And prior to 1989, there was a large public outcry regarding the illegal take of large brood stock fish for the purposes of caviar and meat sales. Overall, the Columbia River sturgeon population was declining at the time. In 2005, however, if this bill passes, the department will undergo a detailed review and analysis of the current science of private sturgeon aquaculture. There are apparently some successful private commercial aquaculture facilities now in Idaho and California. A key issue in these facilities is that they must develop their own broodstock with the goal of eliminating broodstock collection from the wild. Only after a careful review of the current situation on sturgeon aquaculture may the commission allow a tightly controlled expansion of commercial sturgeon aquaculture in the state. As the fish transport permit section, in section 2 of the bill, proposes that the laws regarding fish transport permits be amended to allow holders of a fish propagation permit issued under ORS 497.252 to transport live fish without first obtaining a fish transport permit. The agency is concerned that our ability to protect existing fish populations would be greatly diminished. Licensed fish propagators would be authorized unlimited and unmonitored movement of fish of any time without any control. Transportation permits provide ODFMW the opportunity to evaluate fish movement activities to prevent undesirable species interaction or the transfer and or introduction of diseases to Oregon waters.
Mr. Hollinger?
Yes, sir.
Does the issue of the transportation, is it different if they're not transporting the fish to the wild? In other words, from one private pond to another private pond, what's the state's interest in regulating that movement?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when we met with Joe and some of the folks in the Aquaculture Association, we were informed that the issue was that they would like just a reoccurring transport permit to be able to move fish from like a private hatchery to like a farmer's market, live fish where they could sell and kill them at the time and those kinds of things. Under our rules, we can already issue such a permit where they don't have to come back to the department time and again for a transport permit. And we informed Joe that we could currently do this under our rules. Now, there might have been some situations.
I really want to understand the use of it, to take it to a farmer's market.
Yes.
Okay.
Where I
didn't hear them say that was one of the reasons that they wanted this permit.
Well,
go ahead. I mean, they're nodding yes, though. So, okay, go ahead.
The issue as explained to me, Mr. Chair, is that they have to continually wait for transfer permits if they're kind of delivering fish to an area where they're not going to be released anywhere near state waters. But
I see.
But for instance, to a research facility where the fish are going to be used for research purposes and not released in state waters, or for a farmer's market where they might be killed and sold there to farmer's market for fresh fish. And essentially under our rules now, we can address that issue. And so we're unsure why we need to change the statute if we can give them what they need now under rule.
Okay.
And that's the department's position on that section.
Thank you. I'm going to turn this over to Senator Atkinson.
Sure.
I apologize. I need to duck out.
Lastly, on the advisory committee.
Roy?
Yes, sir.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Just as you're reading through that, 4 years ago, the department brought these really beautiful steelhead to the Capitol. Do you remember that? And these plexiglass tanks. They're just huge.
Yes, sir.
Did the department get a permit to move those fish?
I'd have to go check for you. I assume that. I don't know if we have to issue ourselves a fish transport permit or not. But I will check on that.
I'd like to know.
Well, I will do that.
Okay.
Mr. John, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Thorpe. I'm the Fish Propagation Program Manager for the state. We don't issue permits to ourselves to transport wild fish in the state of Oregon. And those fish I believe you're talking about the plexiglass tank we use. No, we don't issue ourselves permits. One of the issues with transport of fish and release of fish is that we need to be able to evaluate if those fish are going. In the state of Oregon, we don't direct any of our hatcheries to transport fish and release them unless we've already done a management program that indicates that's where we want the fish to go. And that's similar to the process we go through when we evaluate release permits for private hatcheries. So these things are within our plan.
Thank you. And I certainly would urge the department to bring those fish back to the Capitol so the members of this committee could take a long look at what we're struggling over. But it doesn't seem all that consistent to me to ask the public to do something that the government's not willing to do themselves. That's just a philosophy of mine.
Can I answer that?
No.
How about if we finish up testimony, Mr. Vice Chair? Unless you would like an answer to that, we can respond.
Let me finish this one.
Go ahead.
We finish up our testimony as to the advisory committee. Section 3 proposes private fish hatchery advisory committee consisting of representatives of private aquaculture, education, and several state agencies. We've been working already with a group of the Oregon Aquaculture Association, which is a new association, and frankly, we intend to work with the Aquaculture Association whether or not a permanent committee is put in statute or not. And that's our position on that.
Terrific.
And then my prepared testimony, Mr. Vice Chair.
Senator Byer.
Thank you. Roy, let's start with Section 3 and we'll move forward, I guess. If you plan on doing it anyway, why are you opposed to putting in statute?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Byer, I guess our only issue was that we were not sure of the need for a permanent advisory committee in statute. We create advisory committees all the time on certain things. For instance, we just had a select group of archers and hunters, bow hunters and archers and other hunters and non-hunters, work together on a review of our bow hunting rules in the last year. And now they've finished up their work and are making a report to the commission of that. And so our thing was, in looking at the issues currently on aquaculture, we weren't sure that the department really needed, I guess, the expense in some ways of a permanent advisory committee.
Mr. Chair, another question?
Sure.
Thank you. So if the issue is permanent, if this was to have a 4 or 6 year sunset, would that alleviate the concerns that you have addressed?
Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Byer, if there was a sunset put on the advisory committee, that would alleviate one of the department's concerns. Yes, sir.
Another question? Would that also do something to about the fiscal? Because as you know, it seems like a pretty big fiscal. We're talking about a full-time staff person, and the way I understood it, I thought I read through the fiscal about 4 meetings per year. And it seems like an awful lot of staff time for 4 meetings per year to have a full-time person staffing that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Byer, and I have, I think, the fiscal in front of me. The main issue of the fiscal was the sturgeon issue, frankly, sir. The sturgeon issue is going to take a lot of work because of all the broodstock issues and everything else, and we are thinking that right now, the department is stretched rather thin in dealing with the growth of the aquaculture, private aquaculture association or the business. And we would like to facilitate that. And frankly, one of the issues that keeps coming up from the aquaculture association is, well, nobody seems to be helping us in the department with the growth of our industry. Nobody seems to be helping us on fish health issues. Nobody seems to be helping us on these other issues for us to expand and become much more of a part of the landscape here in Oregon. And frankly, Senator Byer, we would like to have someone on staff to work with the Aquaculture Association. And one of the big issues that they bring up in this bill is expansion of sturgeon aquaculture, which in 1989 this body restricted the science and educational purposes only. So if the state of Oregon is going to get back in the aquaculture business for sturgeon, which could be a huge business sometime in the future, maybe for the state, but certainly in California it's a pretty good business now, I think it would behoove the state to invest in an FTE to work with the advisory group and to work particularly on the sturgeon aquaculture issues and other issues that really seem to keep resonating with the Young Aquaculture Association.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Roy, for clearing that up, because the fiscal doesn't speak to it being part of the sturgeon process. It speaks to the fiscal only being because of the advisory committee. I appreciate you clearing that up.
But Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Byer, I'd be happy to file an amended one to make sure that issue is put on the record correctly. We'll do that.
On the sturgeon, if we were to pass this bill, this does not allow anyone to go take any additional broodstock out of the Columbia River. Isn't that correct?
Senator Atkinson, Senator Byer, you're correct. What essentially this bill does is put it back on our commission to allow or maybe not allow folks get back in the sturgeon aquaculture business. And that may or may not allow some broodstock taken from the wild.
So it wouldn't be up to the commission to set any new rules for the aquaculture business, and whether or not, in fact, even any permits are issued would be up to the commission.
Okay, so I'm just trying to read how, you know, because the only real change, right now a person needs a permit from the commission.
Yes.
The way I'm reading this.
Yes, sir.
But the only use for those eggs, if they go get them, are for education and research.
Yes, sir.
So this bill doesn't mandate the commission gives any more permits or anything else for brood stocks.
Senator Atkinson, Senator Beyer, that's correct. It does not mandate the commission do anything if it would pass. But the commission would have the authority, if they wanted to allow permits to go forward on a commercial situation.
So the fiscal on the sturgeon is at your discretion if you determine you need to study that and, you know, bring a person on to look at the you know, populations of sturgeon, whatever else you would do, I guess, and see whether or not you could issue permits to take more from the wild. But it's at your discretion.
Well, Senator Atkinson, Senator Beyer, I think probably what would happen if the bill would pass, particularly as to the sturgeon situation, I think the very first thing our commission would request of the agency is a complete review of sturgeon aquaculture in the western states and as to what is taking place currently, what is the potential, and how we could work with the aquaculture industry here in Oregon to facilitate that. So I think, especially initially, it would take some staff time to bring enough work to the commission for them to then decide whether or not we want to expand sturgeon aquaculture or not.
Okay. I've got to get a clarification on that point. So a person who wants to grow sturgeon, if this bill passes, and not necessarily get them from the wild, not the brood stock from the wild, anything else, but they just want to, you know, throw a few sturgeon in with their trout, you know, or whatever, they'd still have to come get a permit, and it'd still be permissive by the commission to issue that permit.
Senator Atkinson, Senator Beyer, yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me for now.
Other questions?
Mr. Vice Chair,
Senator Burdick.
I kind of wonder what, if one of the arguments against this is the genetic quality of the sturgeons. I mean, I know that, you know, the issue of hatchery salmon versus wild salmon has come up. Has that been a factor in this issue in the past?
Senator Atkinson, Senator Burdick, I'm thinking we'll ask John Thorpe, our propagation manager, who is from Idaho and very familiar with sturgeon aquaculture, to answer that.
Senator Burdick, Vice Chair Atkinson, would you repeat that question so I can get just exactly the right answer?
With the genetic quality of the stock is an issue. In other words, kind of commingling farmed sturgeon with the wild sturgeon, whether there's any kind of genetic degradation that occurs with that, and whether that might have been a factor in the original ban.
Yes, Senator Burdick, that was a concern. One of the big concerns in raising sturgeon is you can take several hundred thousand eggs from one female, and therefore your genetic base is 100,000 offspring from one fish. And in the state of Idaho, we had a lot of concern with that, that we didn't want to. We wanted to really restrict the number of fish that went back in the wild. This particular question would be strictly for commercial aquaculture, and we would not be intending to use these fish for supplementation to our wild population. But there is a big issue on being able to produce hundreds of thousands of fish from a single adult, and then using those to in our salmon and steelhead programs, we maximize the number of adults in order to provide the genetic diversity. You go off exactly the opposite when you take one female and produce hundreds of thousands of fish. It's a real serious problem, and that would have to be closely monitored. One of the issues that we are concerned about on allowing private aquaculture and proliferating private rearing of sturgeon is people think their fish are too big for their pond. They may decide to get rid of them by releasing them in the wild. That's a difficult situation for us because we don't want those fish out there.
And how can you control that?
our recommendation would be for an extensive marking program and increased enforcement. The biggest way to control it is not to have the private aquaculture producing those fish with a viable reason to have them out there.
Mr. Chair? But these questions must have been addressed both in California and in Idaho, where you came from. How were they addressed?
Well, in Idaho, where I worked, we did some extensive genetic studies on how to release reared fish into the wild that address a lot of these issues. They also have utilized a very extensive marking program on their adult sturgeon. And they have problems with enforcement of those things. The enforcement individuals deal with cases of poaching, of fish movement, the same things we have with other species besides sturgeon. With the life of a sturgeon at 100 years, the impact of one of those fish going back in the wild is much greater than the fish that dies in 2 years. And so there's different issues that are involved in it. But that's something we're very concerned with. Oregon's concerned with it. Idaho was concerned with it. I'm sure in California they're concerned with it. It's an issue that still is the management folks are dealing with that. But once the decision was made to go commercial in those programs, then they've simply had to manage around that.
In the wild, you have sturgeon that also live 100 years, and you would also have the 100,000 eggs or whatever from one sturgeon and on. So what's the difference between that kind of genetic overpopulation by one fish and that happening with a farm fish? I don't understand the difference there. What, can you clarify that for me?
Vice Chair Atkinson, Senator Shields. Yes, the difference is the same difference we deal with hatchery salmon and steelhead, where with the concern that we're able to get an advantage over the wild fish. We can take 100,000 sturgeon eggs and have reasonably good survival. In fact, Leo Ray in Idaho has recently had a survival of up to 50% of those fish by careful rearing. Whereas in the wild, losses are in the 99% category. And so one fish doesn't have the opportunity to impact the population as greatly as it does when you rear them in a captive environment.
I guess I don't have any more questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Senator.
Thank you. Corey Pelfrey?
Yes.
And Lyle? Come back up. And Tom, do you want to testify? We'll bring a couple of them. We've got a full list here. Hold on just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, you. Okay. Corey, please proceed. State your name for the record.
My name is Corey Pelfrey. I help with and are part of Pelfrey Herden's sturgeon hatchery, which is owned by Henry Pelfrey, who is my uncle. I've prepared a written testimony that was submitted. I hope everybody has that. Please bear with me. It's the first time I'm testifying in front of a public hearing. So if you have any questions, stop me at any point. And I just want to read my testimony. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Corey Pelfrey. I'm employed by my uncle Henry Pelfrey and often help with the Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery. Mr. Pelfrey and his wife, Lena Woods, are in Hawaii currently, and due to the short notice of this hearing, were unable to return to attend. The testimony I'm about to present is on behalf of all of us, and to simplify matters, I shall just say on behalf of Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery. Just some background information. White sturgeon is an indigenous only to the Columbia River in Oregon, the Fraser River in Canada, and the Sacramento River in California, and their tributaries. Fully mature white sturgeon often reach the lengths of 10 to 15 feet and weigh 500 to 800 pounds. These fish are extremely hardy and sometimes live to be over 100 years old. Over the years, the sturgeon population dwindled significantly.
In 1989, in an effort to improve the sturgeon population in Oregon, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife adopted Oregon Administrative Rule 635-007-0700-0720, which provided for a special permit for operation of sturgeon hatchery for the purpose of propagation and raising sturgeon. Propagation means the collection of broodstock sturgeon in the Columbia River, the extraction of the eggs from the female, extraction of the sperm from the males, and the fertilization of the eggs. The procedures for propagating sturgeon originated in Russia for caviar production. About 30 years ago, a Russian defector brought the procedures to the United States. He taught the professors of the University of California at Davis how to propagate the sturgeon. They began the sturgeon program and wrote the first manual on propagation of white sturgeon in the United States. Since 1989, Oregon administrative rules have allowed up to three of these permits to be issued to private facilities that met the permit criteria. The criteria is very strict. Only two of these permits have ever been issued. Since 1989, Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery has held one of these special permits and operated pursuant to it. Since 1989, only one other hatchery has held one of these permits in Oregon. That hatchery only stayed in business until about 1992. It is much more difficult business than most people realize. Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery is one of the only five white sturgeon hatcheries in the United States. Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery is privately owned and operated, and it has never accepted any grants or public funding. However, it has significantly contributed to the sturgeon population in the state of Oregon. Part of the permit criteria for maintaining the special permit requires that in exchange for taking the brood stock from the Columbia River, Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery provides the state of Oregon with 3-inch to 18-inch fish, which Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife plants in the upper tributaries to the Willamette River. These tributaries were depleted of sturgeon prior to Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery fish being planted there each year since 1989. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife tagged these sturgeon before releasing them, and many of them have been became legal catch size in the sport fishing approximately 5 years ago. Over the years, the sturgeon spawn and raised by Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery have been purchased for mitigating the effects of construction in waterways, ponds, they are bottom feeders and clean up well after trout and koi, and aquariums. Regulations prohibit selling these fish for human consumption. The effects of the Senate Bill 351. No one at Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery had heard of this proposed changes sought in the State Bill 351 until the afternoon of Friday, February 10, 2005. It took us by surprise, to say the least. Palfrey Sturgeon Hatchery has a serious concerns regarding significant changes proposed in Senate Bill 351. It appears that the changes fall into three categories. One, changes in the criteria of the propagation permit. Two, appointment of a hatchery advisory committee, which excludes the only currently licensed sturgeon hatchery in the state from a position on the committee. And three, changes which might open the door to allow for hatchery-raised sturgeon to be sold for human consumption. To speak to the first one, the changes in the criteria for propagation permit. Propagation of sturgeon basically means spawning sturgeon by extracting the eggs and females, extracting sperm, and so forth. There are two basic ways of obtaining the propagation. The first type utilizes wild brood stock, which is defined under present rules as females between 6 to 8.5 feet in length and males 4 to 6.5 feet in length. The second type utilizes domestic brood stock, which are hatchery raised sturgeon. Each type of propagation raises different concerns. As you will note, Senate Bill 351, Section 1, 3 deletes the language of the permit that allows for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to only issue the permit, quote, solely for the educational scientific purposes. Instead, it authorizes Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to issue the permit subject to such terms and conditions as the Commission considers appropriate to protect, perpetuate, and enhance the sturgeon population of the Columbia River and other waters on this state. Then, just in case Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife does not interpret the permit criteria the way that the promoters of this bill think it should be interpreted, Senate Bill 351 in Section 3, Paragraph 2E, provides for an advisory committee to help Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife determine, quote, the species, the number of fish of each species allowed to be propagated in the state. Query, does the other waters of the state mean the state navigable waters, or does it mean any private pond. These types of interpretation problems are epidemic to this bill as a whole. For many years, Pelfrey Sturgeon Henry has helped Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Washington Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Department of Fisheries, Oregon State University Researches, Idaho State University Researches, U.S. Geological Services, Bonneville Power Administration, Indian Tribes, and many others to conduct their research, all at no expense to the agencies or researchers. If Pelfrey Sturgeon Henry is able to work within the present statutes and regulations, others can too. Senate Bill 351 does not differentiate between propagation utilizing wild brood stock sturgeon and domestic brood stock. As presently worded, Senate Bill 351 applies to both. There are different concerns with each type of propagation. As discussed above, the propagation of wild brood stock requires one to catch a female sturgeon between 6 to 8.5 feet long that is of the right stage of gestation, which is, in the industry is known as ripe. And preferably 3 male sturgeon between 4 to 6.5 feet long that are ready to spawn. Obviously, this is a hit or miss situation that can require many nights of fishing to find the right fish. Wild brood stock must be handled properly or they will suffer damage. Our government agencies know this. We are often asked to volunteer our time and equipment to help them. For example, when Bonneville Hatchery needed Herman the sturgeon and his companion fish for their display ponds, they asked us to catch the sturgeon, ranging from 5 to 10 feet long, for them. Then, when the Bonneville Hatchery wanted to move Herman the sturgeon into the new tank, they asked Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery to move him because they did not have any experience in the moving of oversized sturgeon. Just knowing how to spawn and raise trout or salmon does not qualify one to handle or propagate broodstock sturgeon. Properly operating a sturgeon hatchery requires much more than a boat and a fishing pole. Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery hires professional fishermen with fishing boats with huge cotton gill nets to catch the sturgeon we spawn. Of course, we are on the boats too. This is a much less stressful for the fish we choose and for the fish that are released, instead of catching them with a hook and line. Our hatchery is indoors in a climate control facility where variables and influence growth can be controlled. Good and plentiful well water is also critical. As presently worded, Senate Bill 351 has no criteria regarding the qualifications of a permit holder. It does not set any requirements regarding background experience, training, capitalization, education, etc. Further, it would open the door to many possible abuses, such as utilizing a permit to poach oversized sturgeon, collect eggs to sell as caviar. Senate Bill 351 opens the door for possible abuses without providing any procedures or funding for the increased regulatory oversight it requires. 1.2, propagating utilizing domestic broodstock. Domestic broodstock would have to come from either within the state of Oregon or be brought in from outside the state of Oregon. At this point, the proponents of Senate Bill 351 have not mentioned anything about this in this bill to anyone at Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery, so it appears that they plan to use domestic broodstock from outside the state of Oregon. This raises the issue of the induction of viruses and other diseases into the state of Oregon. Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery has always been extremely careful to protect the fish in our hatchery from viruses and diseases. Excuse me. My uncle would not even let his daughter have a goldfish in their home for fear of carrying a virus into the hatchery. Further, there is a question of what happens if the imported sturgeon and their offspring are accidentally released into the wild. Senate Bill 351 raises many issues and addresses almost none. Second part of it, appointment of the Hatchery Advisory Committee. First, there is a serious question as to why an advisory committee regarding private fish hatchery is necessary. If the trout hatcheries think they need one for regulating trout production, then they should limit it to trout. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has directly regulated sturgeon hatcheries since 1989 without needing an advisory committee. Second, when one looks at the composition of the Hatchery Advisory Committee in Section 3.1, it is apparent that it is weighted to favor a certain interest. The one interest that is not included is any present or future sturgeon hatchery licensee. Pursuant to Senate Bill 351-2, paragraph 2E, why does Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife need an advisory committee to advise it on, quote, the species and number of fish of each species allowed to be propagated in the state, end quote. This is what the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife staff is supposed to do based upon impartial research, not based upon what is best for the interest of the advisory committee. This provision is very bad public policy. It does not pass the smell test. Third part of the bill. Senate Bill 351 appears to allow for the hatchery raised sturgeon to be sold for human consumption. Under the present sturgeon hatchery permit conditions, the sturgeon spawned by the hatchery may not be sold for human consumption. It is unclear under Senate Bill 351 whether this might change. Section 2C provides for the advisory committee to provide advice on harmonization and integration of regulations relating to fishing clubs, private catch clubs, and all types of private fish propagation. There would appear to be a first step toward opening the door to selling sturgeon for human consumption. Pelfrey Sturgeon Hatchery has no real objection to sturgeon hatcheries or others selling domestic sturgeon for human consumption. We just raised the point because it should be considered. In conclusion, we believe that Senate Bill 351 is not the best interest of the state of Oregon. It appears to be written for the benefit of special interest group and without much understanding of the realities of propagating sturgeon. That ends my written testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pelfrey, and I apologize that I missed the first part of your testimony. Did you submit written testimony, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'll be able to read it and catch up. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I looked at it earlier. Where is your operation located?
Our Senator Chair, our operation is currently in the city of Fairview, Monoma County.
I see. And how many employees do you have?
We have one full-time employee and hire seasonal staff during hatch season.
And you're a for-profit operation?
Yes, though we probably haven't turned a profit in a long time.
Okay. Gosh, I hear that a lot. Are you concerned that if you open the doors and let this through, you're gonna have competition that's gonna hurt your business?
No, not so much as competition to us. I think we are more concerned of two things. One being being shut out from a committee or being shut out from an advisory committee that could hold advisory, I guess, power over an industry that we seem to be the sole experts in at the moment, and being shut out of that is got a deep concern. Second one would be bringing in fish from out of state fish. There has been definite cases of problems with the sturgeon populations in California. I have not heard of any in Idaho, but there's always the risk. We have the risk of bringing in diseased fish into our environment. Those fish then getting into the wild and damaging the wild or damaging our operations as well or any other aquaculture.
It sounds like that there's quite a bit of sturgeon farming in California, but also they do it with more regulations than would exist if we pass this bill. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Do they do it right in California? I mean, if we go look at what they have in the way of oversight, for example, state oversight, would that make you more comfortable with this?
I could not testify to whether they do it right or not.
Well, do they have problems that you know of?
Yes.
What are the problems?
They have extreme die-offs. They have disease problems. Some of those have been probably adjusted by purchasing or certifying their fish as not to have diseases and getting their sources.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 4 of your testimony, you said it presently words, Senate Bill 351 has no criteria regarding the qualifications permit holder. It doesn't set any requirements regarding background experience, .. It continues on for paragraph. Yet under current statute, if we do nothing, you are the only permit holder, and the law has none of this in it. So I'm trying to figure out why you would object to
open the door for other people to do it, but if other people do it, there have to be qualifications considered on background, experience, training, capitalization, education, etc. But the law doesn't require your operation to do that.
Senator, I would disagree with that in the fact that I believe Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife do require that criteria of us and have required it of other people who have applied for the Special 3 permits.
I'm not going to dispute to you that the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department can require the criteria by rule, but by law, which this and we're interested in changing the laws, not the rules. They deal with rules, and all this bill would do was allow them to issue permits to other people under the same criteria that you have to meet.
I guess we wouldn't fully object to that as long as there's criteria that would establish that they would have to be properly educated and have proper experience in the industry. For instance, our education came directly from the University of Davis, California, as well as the Russian defector who actually wrote the program for the United States. In gaining the, I believe, as I am been told, Fish and Wildlife actually required us have them on staff for a certain amount of time in order to train our facility managers and train our owner, Henry Pelfrey, in the proper way to do it. Also, when we do our operations, we actually hire, during hatchery or doing propagation, we actually hire licensed vets, which are required to oversee the females as after the eggs are extracted and make sure that she's given a checkup and that they actually suture her back up. So I would say those are the kind of things that should be in place or should be required. And if those things are met by another permittee, I see no reason why the permit shouldn't be granted to other people.
Okay, so that clarifies that, because
correct.
The law doesn't say that you have to go through those processes. That's the rule. Those are the conditions of your permit.
Yes, Senator.
Okay. Another question? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And another concern you voiced was the fact that there would be no voice for the sturgeon industry in the advisory committee. And you're right, that's not, but currently yours is the only facility in the state that has a permit to do this. And there is up to four members who could be, not who aren't specifically listed. So just because your business is not listed as a person who would be on this, it doesn't mean you're specifically excluded, because there are up to four other members who aren't listed.
Yes, Senator. I guess our position on that is, why cannot, if certain positions are being defined in the law as to specifically, I believe there is a somebody producing so much poundage per year or so much, could there not be something included into this law that would require that at least one permittee in the state of Oregon or that has a propagation license for sturgeon also be a criteria for the advisory committee?
Mr. Chair, I understand your point. I guess it probably wasn't included in the draft, because there is only one licensee in the state who has that permit. And if that person was to decline to serve, would we then have an invalid
Correct.
Commission?
Correct.
That's a good question. Thank you very much. Is there anything else from the committee? Okay. And so did you already testify?
No.
Not yet.
Okay.
Okay. My name's Lyle Negus from Desert Springs Trout Farm. Let's see, Senator Ringo. And we bought sturgeon from this gentleman's company a number of years ago. About 50 or 60 of them grew too large to sell to the market as unless the aquarium fish. So we turned them loose in a pond when they were probably 16 inches long, a pond on our property. And they're now, I see one once in a while in that small pond. It's just they haven't been fed. They just eat whatever's there for them to eat. But there's some of them around eight feet long. And I know of the hide ranch around Klamath Falls has around 500 white sturgeon from the Columbia River in one of their fishing ponds. So the point of it is there is brood stock around where you wouldn't have to take fish out of the Columbia River to acquire brood stock. And
you favor the bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And just to relieve this gentleman's mind, I guess we'd have to apologize to you for not telling you about the bill, but an oversight partially on our part. The other thing is that you were invited to join the CV organization, and we never heard back from you.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't need that conversation. Thanks. Questions? Thanks very much. I'd like to ask a question. I have several people signed up. You can go ahead and sit down. And maybe just raise your hands. I've got a Thomas McDonald. Are you here? You're in favor of the bill?
Yes, sir.
And Ann Nystrom, you're in favor?
Yes, sir. And I have some specific
comments. Okay. And Bob, you're in favor of the bill?
And I do have some very specific comments. I can make it quick.
Okay, why don't the two of you come up and make it quick? I mean, I don't mean to exclude you, Mr. McDonald, if you... Okay, okay. Because we got another bill to move on to, and frankly, after hearing from you guys, I want to bring back up ODF and W and kind of hear their response. So please say something different from what we have already heard.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chairman Ringo. The purpose of this bill, quite frankly, is commercially. You know, let's put that on the table here. We're talking about the Pelfrey was concerned that this may go towards raising fish for food consumption and everything else. I myself will not do this, but I'm speaking as for the people in general that I know and everything else for fish industry. This could be very viable. Commercially, extremely viable. And as far as the concerns of the ODF of releasing the fish, why would they release the fish? This is for commercial purposes. They're not raising fish for turning them loose like the salmon or anything else. They are raising fish to make money off of them. You don't make money by turning your fish stock loose. Concerns by ODF are, well, they're out there, to say the least. As far as the Pelfrey fish, raising their own, and he's concerned about special interests. As I sat back there, I was listening to him, and it just sounded like a special interest right there himself. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude to the guy or anything else, but
we got another 30 seconds. We got to move on here.
Okay. As far as the Fish Commission and everything else goes, I would love to see that because. I don't deal with them a lot, but I do hear from other hatcheries and about all the double speak and everything else. We'll have once, you know, they'll deal with somebody one way and deal with somebody else another way.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Okay. Thank you very much. Could you just state your name for the record?
Bob Horning.
Okay. Thank you very, Bob. It's Nystrom.
And Rystrom.
Rystrom, I'm sorry.
From Clear Creek Rainbow Ranch.
Go ahead, Ms. Rystrom.
Senator Ringo, I guess Section 1 is allowing us to raise sturgeon. And I'm trying to go through my points and kind of pull them together to make them kind of brief, and I'm very good luck.
That's okay.
One of the concerns that we did have, we would like to raise sturgeon as a commercial crop here in Oregon. We feel that the moratorium on anything over 6 inches is not realistic and is not allowing us to expand our aquaculture business as well we might need to. There are a number of points. The first one being that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife put out some points of consideration regarding Senate Bill 351. They're included in my Appendix B in here. In items 1, 3, oh, I've got them listed, like 1, 2, 3.
What's
1, 2, 3, and 5. It appeared that what they were going to do was to, because we brought up this question about being able to raise sturgeon in the state of Oregon, it appears that what they are going to do is to immediately go out and contact the only sole sturgeon hatchery that we have and make it very difficult for them to operate or to change the rules by which they hold their propagation license. We did not intend to have them get retribution because we're trying to legitimize the raising of sturgeon in the state of Oregon. We're only doing it because the other states have it. Pelfrey's right now is putting back 5,000 to 7,000 fish into the Columbia River system right now that they are beginning to catch back. How much has this program alone benefited the gill netters, the Indians, and recreational fish? The gill netters last year took 7,600 fish, sturgeon, to keep to sell for markets at $1.80 a pound. Pelfrey's putting back approximately the same amount of fish. Without that, filling in with recruitment, where would they be? Why couldn't we get our broodstock out of those 7,600 fish if we needed broodstock? Right now in the OARS, we are given allowed 18 fish per year to be taken for broodstock. Compared to the 7,000, what's the...
Let's do another 30 seconds, please, and I need to keep moving this.
Okay, but the task force would help to address these issues, and some of this stuff could be worked out. We are afraid that they'll do two... sturgeon what they've done with the grass carp, which is to make it too difficult for anybody to actually do the raising of the fish in the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much. I'd like to have Roy Ellicker and John Thorpe come back up just briefly, please. Oops. I just have a comment, and frankly I'd invite comments from the committee, but It seems to me that in your testimony you raise a number of concerns, but they're concerns that it may be possible to address them. For example, the fish transport permits. You're concerned that some sturgeon be released in the wild, for example, but it seems to me that you could really tighten it down so that you could clarify that can't happen. We're going to have triple death penalty if it happens. I mean, put in some penalties so that what you fear, there would be some serious repercussions. And I'm just wondering whether there can't be a way to try accommodate the concerns of these people that have testified, rather than just saying, no, we can't do it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I feel like we've been mischaracterized here a little bit.
On the sturgeon
issue, if the state of Oregon wants to open up aquaculture to commercial sturgeon production, the department is not saying no to that. The department is saying that we will take that on. But it will take some effort in particular initially to figure out what is the best way for the state to go on this. As I stated before, there are a lot of concerns from recreational and commercial fishermen because it's such a huge resource for them. And if we're going to go into the commercial aquaculture business, there are some real issues we probably have to review and take a hard look at and see how we're going to proceed to do that. Our second, the transport issue policy, was not related to the sturgeon issues whatsoever. The transport policy, as I said, it's my, I guess, testimony that based on our, we've had several meetings, good meetings, with Joe Rolater and Clint Bentz and others since they had their bills and showed us their concepts, that we can take their concerns on the transport permit in rule. We don't need to change the statute to help them out on the transport permit. So that's separate. That's a separate issue totally from the sturgeon aquaculture issues.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to clarify that for the record.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't want to spend any more time on this right now, but I would like to find a way so that if we can develop a commercial aquaculture industry in Oregon, that we move in that direction, and that we not get bogged down in details or concerns that we might be able to address. And I guess is what I'd like to do is maybe I'll meet with you sometime in the next week, Mr. Ellicker, and see if we can't move in that direction.
Sure. Mr. Chair, be happy at any time to come by and discuss this bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any comments from Senator Shields?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for doing that because I would hope that you and Roy could work some of this out. I think that it would be good to have just an ongoing conversation around it. I guess my question would be is, if California has now got to the point where there's 3 million pounds, I think about the economic impact of that. What could it benefit Oregon economically if we were in the same place? I'm just wrestling with this. I guess
sure.
I need some information. If there was some hazards, explain it to me.
you know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, we spent a bunch of time getting ready for this hearing, working on the Idaho issues. I'm not sure that we'd agree with Mr. Rollator that they're raising currently 300,000 pounds, but it is a substantial industry there, and in California, much more so. And we have not spent any time looking at the California situation. Frankly, it's Sacramento River stock. I'll be happy in the next week or two to put some staff time onto that issue and get a better sense in California, really. I know the growth of the industry down there has been spurred by the University of California, and I think it's Davis, or I'm not mistaken. But the University of California has really been the major key to allowing the sturgeon industry to move forward there, the aquaculture industry. And we don't have, in any sense, any research aquaculture at this point in our state universities like California does. But we can, maybe it's time to start that discussion.
I guess, Mr. Chair, all I'm saying is, has the University of California at Davis learned something, and can we learn from it in Oregon?
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Arbuckle, my hope is that we can pass out a bill this session that will move this forward, not a bill to create a study or to set up just the commission to figure it out, but we can look at what works in California, figure out what safeguards we need, build those amendments into the bill, and move it out.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
So I'd like to try to do that.
No problem. We will work with you on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your comments, and I'd be happy to work with you or the groups as need be to facilitate the discussion. Specifically on the transport permit, and I know the department says they can do it by rule, but they haven't. And I don't know why they haven't, but they haven't. And I can't remember how many times already this session and every session prior to this we've been here and we've had agencies bring bills to us and say, we're doing this now. It's on the cutting edge of what statutes allow. But we'd like to make sure we have authority. So why don't you change the statutes to allow what we're already doing? What we're trying to do is we're trying to be very clear, make it very clear that they have authority to do that because they haven't done it by rule yet. So I don't understand if it's allowable by rule, let's change the statute to make very clear that it's allowable by rule, so then there won't be any discussion about that 2 years from now, 4 years from now, if someone comes in and says, you're doing things you're not really allowed to do, and the department will come and say, well, we're kind of issuing permits like this now, and we think we have the authority to, but we're not sure, so why don't you change the law and make it so it's clear. So, for once, I think this group is trying to be forward with the statute saying they're unclear. Let's make them clear. So that's specifically to Section 2 of the bill, and let's work to get it done.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer would be happy to work with Senator Beyer on perhaps a little different language for Section 2 to clarify that we have the ability and will do so, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 351. And, committee, we need to do one more committee bill that Don Schellenberg handed to us as a bill introduction since we have 14 minutes left. So let's open a public work session on the committee bill. And why don't you go ahead and read the entire summary, because you guys haven't seen this. So
why not? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have LC 2144 for relating to replacement dwellings in exclusive farm use zones. The summary is, allows applicants for replacement dwelling in exclusive farm use zone to apply for a deferral replacement permit that remains valid indefinitely if established dwelling is removed or demolished within 3 months of issuance of permit.
Okay. Chair moves for the introduction of that bill as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Run to LC fast, please. And then let's open a...
What a way to get it out of committee. I mean,
Let's open the public hearing on Senate Bill 352. And do we have the sign-up list? Oh, here it is right here. And I'm closing this hearing in 13 minutes. So I want this issue framed in that amount of time. Joe, if you want to come on up and come with Cliff Bentz if you'd like. And you've got about 4 minutes to frame the hearing, and then we're going to have the department respond. I hope that's okay with the folks in the audience, because we just don't have time to hear from all of you, but my goal is to at least hear where we're coming from on this. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committees, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm the Government Affairs Advisor for Oregon Aquaculture Association. I'm sorry, I always say that incorrectly. I dealt with Oregon Aquafood down on the beach a lot. This is an existing program. It saves the state money. Private aquaculture can produce trout cheaper than the state can. I've given you a handout that I created based on last year's numbers that I received from ODF&W 2 years ago clearly shows, both from ODF&W's own figures and from the Secretary of State's audit, that trout produced by private aquaculture are cheaper than trout produced at state hatcheries. The state gets more money for the same, or more trout for the same money. It's also rural economic development, and I'll just leave it at that. If Clint has some short framework, you can read my testimony. Thank you.
And I've submitted written testimony to Chair Ringo, titled Blue Den Ranch at the top of the, it's a one page front and back. That covers all three of these bills. There's really two issues for us in Senate Bill 352. One is the rural economic development impact of this. We can produce fish cheaper. The other thing about the pilot program, we're basically asking that this pilot program that has been very successful be made permanent. The one change that we're asking for the in the program is for the ability for the department to do more than a one-year contract, because there's an 18-month to three-year growing cycle for the fish. And basically, as it is now, the for a smaller grower, you basically have to grow your fish on speculation, hoping that you'll get a contract to sell them, versus entering into a contract at the beginning when you for the production cycle. And so that's really the change that we're asking to the pilot, is to basically to have the option to have a multi-year contract, so we could be under contract to raise the fish for the whole thing, rather than have to do it on speculation, and to continue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah, we have to leave at 5 so Senator Atkinson can take his wife out for Valentine's dinner, so that's fine. Is that right?
I'll be brief, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elkert, Oregon Park Fish and Wildlife, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife Programs. Appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony on 352. I guess, to be very brief, Mr. Chair, essentially the department opposes the bill at this point. It would make the pilot program, and it's been a good program, with good quality fish, good acceptance by anglers, and we've spent over $1.28 million since 99, way over, and that's about another double the amount we were supposed to spend under the pilot program, because we found other programs that would work with private aquaculture. It's been a good pilot program. We would not want to make it permanent, because it's just so hard to predict the future on our budget process. Ultimately, if we did not, especially with the use of general fund being more and more phased out of hatchery programs, ultimately it might impact us, meaning closure of a hatchery facility or other hatchery program issues. So because it calls for this 10% to be a permanent fixture in the department's budget for all time, the department feels very uncomfortable about doing anything but saying we don't think it's a good idea. The bottom line for ODF&W is that as budget needs arise, this agency will continue to purchase private hatchery trout. They're a good product. We'll continue to work with the Aquaculture Association, continue to purchase their trout or whatever fish they have if it makes sense to us for our needs and needs for Oregon. However, making the purchase of some fixed percentage or amount a permanent fixture in our budget, again, could force some future reductions in other hatchery programs or facilities.
Thank you. The proponents have given us the sheet reasons to support Senate Bill 352. It saves the state of Oregon money. Are these numbers right?
Have you had a chance, Sarah, to look at them? I have not seen that handout there.
Could you get a copy of this and make sure Mr. Elker gets a copy of this? Because I'd like to know whether they pulled these numbers out of the air, or whether you agree that they're accurate. And you don't need to talk to me right now.
Oh, be happy to come by, Mr. Chair, and talk to you about these numbers. I guess one thing to always remember about our hatchery facilities is with the exception of a few strictly trout hatcheries, most of our hatcheries are salmon steelhead producers as well as trout. So the fact that we are raising trout in those hatcheries helps us to more efficiently use existing salmon and steelhead facilities. So you're looking at it from the state perspective of an integrated hatchery system where we raise trout, salmon, and steelhead primarily at a number of our hatcheries where they're just raising trout. The other thing is, essentially there's really only one vendor in the state we're talking about. There's been Desert Springs Trout Farm. They're the only vendor we've used since 99, since they're the only vendor that has the size and volume to produce trout as to our needs. We're hoping, and we have put together lately, in the last year or so, in our youth angling education program, which was new last year, we have put together a way to buy some smaller groups of fish, smaller fish production from some of the other small hatcheries as well. But primarily, we are still talking since 99 with one vendor with the whole process, who has produced good quality fish for the department. We have no complaints about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Committee, any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I think that gets to the purpose of the bill, is that because Desert Springs Hatchery, you know, or whatever they're called, the official name, the only one that they've dealt with, is because none of these other smaller aquaculture facilities are prepared to go out of speculation right now, because it takes them longer to raise a catch-em-sized trout, you know, over a year, where Desert Springs can do it in a much shorter period of time because they have the physical ability and the natural waters that make fish grow quicker. The other hatcheries need some certainty in the law that there's going to be a program there for them to go on speculation and get these fish rearing in advance, so that when a contract comes up, they've got a fish that they can bid on the job. If they don't have that certainty, we will never have competition in that area, because you know, you can't afford to grow 20,000 fish on speculation. The department may or may not spend some money buying fish this year. If they have it in the law that says that they know that 10% of their trout budget is going to be spent from having private fish, they can then gear up to be hopefully, you know, successful bidding for those contracts.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I wanted Mr. Negus a chance to testify, since he came the distance.
I don't think I need to
consider. Okay. Thank you. Well, does anybody have anything new or different to add? I guarantee you we're going to do quite a bit more analysis on this bill and this concept before we...
Senator, yes. And I just had one comment, which is...
Well, why don't you sit down and identify yourself and give us the comment. That would be fine.
My name's Ann Reistrom, and I'm with Clear Creek Rainbow Ranch and Oregon Aquaculture Association. We did meet with someone from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in November of this last year and discussed this program and Diamond Lake to see if we could get the amount smaller, and to see if we could get the contracts longer so the smaller producers could buy into this. We found out a month later that it is on the chopping block for budget cuts, and we were certainly disappointed at that, because we were trying to work with them to get it to where we could.
Mm-hmm.
The smaller producers could get some support and could participate.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Thanks very much. We'll go ahead and close the hearing on Senate Bill 352 and adjourn the Senate committee.